Hello, everyone, and welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European macro research at Natixis, and with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello, also from my side. So we would like to talk today about the European electricity market. Perhaps not too long ago, that was a topic that seemed somewhat of a sideshow, only experts understanding what was going on. And the rest of us implicitly assumed that things would work out as they should. But as we had to learn, perhaps the hard way over the past 2 years, European electricity markets may not always work that well. We have seen extreme volatility in electricity prices, and this forced European governments to agree on a regulatory reform of the electricity market. Specifically, on October 17, the European Council reached an agreement on a proposal to amend the EU's electricity market design. We want to shed some light on what went wrong in the past and would also like to critically review the main elements of this reform proposal by the European Council. And to do so, we have with us today Professor Andreas Löschel. Andreas holds the chair of resource economics and sustainability at the Ruhr University in Bochum. And he's also the chairman of the German government's expert commission for monitoring the energy transformation towards a decarbonized system. Last but not least, he is also a lead author of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. So thank you, Andreas, for being our guest today and welcome to the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me. Happy to be here, Dirk, Klaus. Thanks.
So let's start with some of the basics. To what extent is the electricity market similar to other energy markets, say the oil or gas market? And what are the key features that distinguishes the electricity market from these other markets?
Well, the electricity market is indeed different, and that comes from the physical necessity of matching demand and supply at every moment in the electricity system. And this is so difficult because it's difficult to store electricity. It's very expensive to shift electricity demand or supply over time. And it also depends heavily on infrastructure for transport, on distribution and transmission grid. So time and place matters a lot in this market, much more than in other markets. It shares some characteristic with gas markets, if you think about the infrastructure problems that we faced last year. But it's very different to the oil market, for example. No, which is a global market that has a lot of storage capacities. Now, electricity is different, and of course, the more granular it gets, the more instant the time you're looking at, the more it's a regular market. But it's only that if you look at a specific time and at a specific place.
So given this, to what extent does it really make sense to speak about an integrated European-wide electricity market? After all, we can see quite large differences in electricity prices across countries at this very moment. So what causes these price differences? Are they more due to structural economic forces? You mentioned grid structure, grid capacity, perhaps even grid-related energy transport losses. Or are these price differences rather the result of regulatory features, red tape, and other things?
Yeah, I think one of the developments of the recent decades was the development of a more integrated European-wide electricity market. And that's very important because we have different technologies with different capacities or capabilities in different parts of Europe. And it's very important to develop networks, grids, to give access to these technologies in different locations. So it's efficient, you know, to develop these markets in a broad sense, because then market demand and supply can meet in an efficient manner. The problem is that over the last years, even though we made some progress, these European markets are still not perfect. And I think the bottom line is, yes, we have a lot of, you know, activities on the European level to make better the European-wide networks, but there is not really somebody that cares deeply about the European market as such. This is a more bottom-up process that is driven by the national grid companies, looking more on the member state perspective in the different markets. So there's still a gap in these markets. We see that in many hours, markets work perfect, prices equalize, but in other hours, we see that infrastructure is a bottleneck and then differences in prices occur. And in the last months, of course, these differences very much dependent on the situation on the gas markets. Some member states, they had secured relatively cheap gas long-term, for example, via their existing infrastructure. Others had problems because, for example, Russian gas was no longer coming to Europe, which means we had simply different access to cheap gas. And that means that when gas power plants are setting prices in these markets, when they are the marginal utility, you know, that has to be running because demand is high, then prices deviate. And that happened a lot. Plus, of course, we had also different national policies towards these price hikes in the gas market, which means some of the member states, they directly targeted high gas prices that put a downward pressure on electricity. And so therefore, we saw this unequal pattern, which in a way was not bad at such, no, because it showed that in some of these regions, simply gas was very scarce and very high priced. And therefore, of course, it's good not to consume too much electricity to put less pressure on gas markets in these regions.
So you mentioned the fragmentation related to gas. So you say, would you say that if we had had better electricity grids that could have sort of transport internationally larger quantities, we would have seen less price dispersion in the cross-section of countries, or would we have seen the same? Is that the, you know, were there bottlenecks in sort of equalizing prices across regions, or were there not during this period where we saw gas driving large wedges in electricity prices in the cross-section of countries?
Yeah, they have been bottlenecks indeed, but I think it's really also the gas infrastructure that was the bottleneck, not so much the electricity infrastructure. This was really more on the gas side. If we would have had, you know, better access to gas internationally, then these differences in gas prices would have not occurred, and we would have better possibilities to equalize also electricity prices. And then, of course, you know, the different countries, the different member states, they are differently depending on gas in electricity. And that also makes a difference. So I think both of these shortcomings in infrastructure actually contributed to the situation. But I think it was important to address first the gas problem by building out, for example, LNG terminals in Germany, by thinking about how we have to improve our gas grids over time and how we can secure more gas coming into Europe and reduce gas consumption. And this reduction of gas consumption, that is not so much happening in electricity generation or consumption. This is really about heat, because that is where most of the gas is actually going through and to industry. So this is more or less independent now from developments on the electricity markets. And it's important to really separate these two things and try to first fix the first problem, which is the gas situation in Europe, not so much the electricity market, but it shows that there is also quite something that we should do to improve our electricity markets.
So the regulatory reform of the electricity markets agreed by the European Council, i.e. the governments in the EU, it seeks to prevent those price spikes from occurring again, and also seeks to insulate households from these extreme fluctuations associated with carbon-related energy prices. One important tool that will be used to achieve that are the so-called contracts for difference. Can you explain to us how these contracts for difference are supposed to work, and can you give us an assessment what they will be able to achieve?
Yes. Well, before turning to contracts for difference, this is on long-term markets. I would probably start with a short comment on short-term wholesale markets, because when we started this discussion about electricity market design, we have seen that focus was mainly on short-term wholesale markets. People were questioning if the merit order system that is implemented, the market clearing price that is used in electricity market is actually right, and whether we should move not to another system to pay a bit or uniform prices, you know, because the market cannot deliver. And I think one of the positive things of the debate of the last month was that this debate actually ended more or less. Now, the short-term wholesale market proved to be very important and also proved to be one of the key, guarantees for dealing with these large shocks that we have seen in the last month. Now, this is about the short-term market, okay?
Sorry, just to interrupt, that means that there was no real change, and that in itself you think is good news, because there were proposals on the table which would have made things a lot worse, in your view.
Yes, I think that's good news, and I think we should reiterate that, no? Because, there were proposals from Spain, from Greece, no, to move, let's say, into uniform pricing, to segment markets by subsidizing gas, for example, to cut down electricity prices. All these things on a European scale are off the table. No, the market is fit for purpose. Okay, and I think it's agreed by most people that this is the case. Now, this is short-term markets, and the role there is to bring together demand and supply and provide the necessary flexibility to cope with fluctuations. And that is one part. Now, you asked about contracts for difference. Now, this is about long-term markets, okay? And the question is, how do we incentivize, actually, investments, especially in renewables? Now, the thing, of course, that we have not touched so far is, the markets came under pressure even before the gas crisis because of the high share of renewables. And renewables, of course, depend on sun and wind. No, so these things are fluctuating much more. And I talked at the very beginning about the importance of time and place. And now time and place plays a more and more important role, because with more renewables, this becomes imminent. And the question is, how can we run a system with 80-90% of renewables? Now, this is short-term market show, this is working. Okay. Now, the question is, do we get the right incentives for investing in these new technologies that, renewables are very capital intensive? Can they actually be financed through this system, the market revenues that they can generate in these short-term markets? And there, there is the discussion where contracts for difference actually enter the space. The idea is here that you are supporting investors in these markets by providing them security, a revenue guarantee for very low prices, and provide as well some limitation for revenues if prices are skyrocketing. That's the idea of contracts for difference, which means that you agree on a certain strike price. Then the difference between the strike price and the market price has to be paid back by the generator if the market price is high, or the generator receives the difference if the market price is low. And this should provide more security for investors that have to run these renewable generators for 20 plus years. And so therefore, the proposal was that if you subsidize this as a government, then you have to subsidize it in the form of a contract for difference that provides these type of security assurance. The important part is that actually the council made clear that there are a lot of opportunities available to member state to implement the contract for difference. Okay, so for example, it's specifically said that you can implement several strike prices, an upper and a lower price. You can also work with floor prices, or you can also disentangle investment and production subsidies at all, no, in something like a financial contract for difference. So the German system, if you think about the German system, this is a floor price at the moment, a one-sided a contract for difference, so to say. So you have only the security that prices will not go too low. Okay, but in the past, there was no upper limit for revenues. Now, this has changed in the crisis. They've introduced also there a second strike price, let's say, from which generators have to pay back the difference. So I would argue the German system is already something now that can fall under this definition of a carbon contract for different, but with a benchmark, no, of strike prices.
Yeah, so someone has to bear the risk of prices fluctuating, and you can either allocate it to the producer or to the generator or to some financial market participant, and it remains to be seen what's the most efficient person who can bear that risk. Now, one issue with these electricity price shocks, it appears, is that fluctuations that we see in wholesale electricity markets that you have just alluded to, the short-term markets, simply do not get transmitted to households at all. In fact, many households, they have fixed-term, fixed-price contracts, and they don't see what the wholesale prices are and also don't adjust their spending patterns. They only see it at the time they want to renew the contract, and then perhaps very few households get confronted with very extreme conditions, as we have seen during the times of gas scarcity. Now, these contracts for difference proposals seemingly go into some way of ensuring also consumers, perhaps, from price fluctuations, certainly the producers. But for an economist, this sort of insurance seems a bit of a weird way of dealing with economic scarcities. It would seem more efficient to have the price signals getting transmitted to households on a regular basis, not only at the time of renewal. Say, when the sun is shining and the wind is blowing, households should consume electricity at a near zero cost, but in other times when electricity is scarce, should try to preserve energy and not consume as much. And it seems that this could directly lower price volatility because it makes demand more elastic. It could improve allocative efficiency and even perhaps lower the average price that the household pays for electricity. So why are we not moving, or are we moving, or are we not moving in this direction?
Yeah. No, I think you're perfectly right. What we need is we need the right prices, you know, in time and space, let's say. And what you have just described is that we need a better transformation of what we see on the wholesale markets towards the households. And we also have to get a better signal that shows us how polluted or how jammed the electricity networks are. And we need both, okay? And we are moving, I think, in the right direction slowly. So part of these new packages are that the utilities, they have to offer dynamic pricing schemes for their customer. No, that allows to really give these price signals directly to the customers. And what we also are going to see for sure is that we will see different contracts emerging with aggregators, that are going to take over, part of these risks for their customers because they are able to share these risks on some level, with their customer base. Now, this is the one part of it, and this is going to happen. So we are going to move out of these contracts that have two prices or three prices so far into something that will be much more flexible and adjusted to what we see on the wholesale market. And that's important because with the high shares of renewables, we are going to see many, many hours where prices are practically zero, and we will see a few hours with very, very high prices. And we need a mechanism that incentivizes the right behavior on the supply and on the demand side. Now, the other thing is that we also need the right locational signals. And this is tricky because at the moment, I talked about the wholesale market and I said wholesale markets worked very well, but at the moment they do not transport any locational signal at all. No, in Germany, for example, we have one price zone. So we do not discriminate anyhow in terms of where the electricity is produced and where it's consumed. We ignore totally the infrastructure that transports electricity. Now, this has to change. No, so we have to make the prices better in terms of the right time and also the right place. And this is something that we are going to discuss further in the future.
Yeah, you already alluded, if you will, to my next question, which is at what level should electricity markets operate in Europe? So should the wholesale price be determined at the union level, the national level, the region level, or perhaps even at a finer level? So Germany, as you said, we have big regional differences in electricity production and consumption, but at the same time, a unified wholesale price all of Germany. Does such a situation provide the right incentives for producers and consumers? And yeah, how granular should the market be there?
Yeah, I think that mainly depends on how well the infrastructure is built out. No, so if you think about an electricity system with a lot of transmission and distribution grids, no, then you would not worry about these locational signals. But the more bottlenecks you get, no, the more important it is to provide the right signals. And I just give you an example. Now, in Germany, we have this large build out of renewables. And since the wind conditions are much better in the north, most of the investments in wind are in the north, no, onshore and, of course, also offshore. Now, that means that we have a lot of electricity in the north, but we need it in the south because a lot of consumption, 2/3 of the consumption, is actually located in the south. So we have to transport it from north to south Germany. Now, the problem is that we are lagging behind in our transmission grid development in Germany for, well, more than a decade or so, which means that very often we cannot handle this transport, which means at the moment we do something that is, let's say, a regulatory intervention of the transmission grid operators, which means that after markets cleared, no, they found out that there's a lot of contracts are actually flowing to the south, but physically this is not possible. So that means they are doing now what's called redispatch. So they are asking south utilities to produce more electricity or ask south consumers to reduce their electricity consumption to balance again the markets because of these physical constraints that are not implemented in the wholesale market. Now, this worked very well over the last decades, but of course, this system is not going to work in the future. Think about, you know, 15 million new electric vehicles, millions of heat pumps, electrolyzers that want to produce hydrogen from electricity, and they all rely on the right market signal. Now, if you have one price zone, and there's a lot of wind power in the north, the prices in this price zone are low, which means the batteries in the south, they are going to be filled up, the electrolyzers are running, the houses are heated up, and the heat pumps are operating, all on wrong signals, because there is no electricity in the south to cope with all that. So therefore, this is not going to work in the future, and we have to think about how we deal with it. And as I said, of course, this depends on the speed of the infrastructure and the build-out of the infrastructure, but we have to find a solution that brings the right signals again to consumers and producers, also from the locational point of view.
Yeah, you mentioned the decarbonization of electricity production. That's going to come and that's going to increase massively. You mentioned target numbers of 80-90% going forward. So is there anything in this reform package that has been agreed by the European Council that relates to the decarbonization of the power system? Or is this something largely orthogonal to that?
Yeah, I would say it's the overarching scheme, so to say, because the electricity sector, in a way, will be the first decarbonized sector in the economy. And we have seen that we are very slow in decarbonizing other sectors. Think about buildings, transport, industry, agriculture. But with electricity, we made quite some progress. We have more than 50% electricity from renewables. And this is going to be increasing fast. We target 80% by 2030 in Germany, and in 2035, this should be all coming from zero carbon sources. Now, the whole idea, I think, of these market design package is how can we deal with this new situation, where we have these large shares of renewables, and what do we have to adjust in short-term markets, in long-term markets? Do we need something like capacity markets to buffer times where the renewables are not there? What about the costs that come along? So I think the idea is here to shape a market that can actually be decarbonized over the next one or two decades as the first market in Europe, potentially.
So overall, how confident are you that Europe will reach its climate target when it comes to electricity production? So in Germany, we have now one of the highest levels of CO2 emissions per kilowatt produced. Will this just be transitory or a longer lasting situation?
Yes, well, I would say I'm relatively optimistic that we can achieve this. Of course, the timeline is still to be debated because we have quite some challenges ahead. The first challenge is, how fast are we with building out renewables? The German government has set, tremendous targets for the build out of renewable. Keep in mind, we have a peak demand of about 80 gigawatt. The targets for 2030 is that we want to build in Germany 400 gigawatt of renewables. Okay, so we are massively overbuilding our systems with renewables. And the question is, can we achieve that? And this is, at the moment, from my perspective, less a problem of market incentives, to be honest, because electricity prices are high, but it's a question of red tape. That was something Klaus was mentioning. No, it's a question of how fast are these processes? Do we have enough space for these new investments? No, what's the acceptability of renewables in the different regions and so on and so forth? So this will be a major challenge. The other challenge is, what do we do with flexible generation capacities? So this is at the moment coal and gas, and it's clear that we will have less coal in the future. So we have the decision to phase out coal by 2038, if possible 2035. The German government wants to already achieve this by 2030. Yeah, but it's clear that all these other things have to be in place in order to really let the coal go. In the end, market driven, this can happen easily if all the other conditions are met, because if coal generation is expensive and it will be expensive because of the high carbon prices, then it will simply not be more competitive on the wholesale market and it will leave the market immediately. But to do so, we need other opportunities. That means we need potentially new gas power plants that can be run on hydrogen, for example, that can substitute for coal and can be cheaper than coal. We need more renewables, and all this will be necessary in order to really make electricity generation green. Now, you mentioned the CO2 emissions per kilowatt. Yes, that is the coal dependency in Germany. But for example, we have seen that coal generation went down quite a lot over the last month. So I'm very optimistic if all these other things are there. I mean, we can go out of coal very, very quick. If it's no longer competitive, it will just go. But we have to invest also in these other opportunities. We need, substitutes for the coal generation. And that is the largest challenge ahead.
And it means, given that for Germany, the challenge is probably the highest, that other countries, say France, for them, it's much easier, also because of the high share of nuclear, all else equal.
Well, no, for them, it's also difficult, no, because the nuclear power plants in France, they are quite old, no, and at the moment, no, they have a lot of issues with refurbishing these power plants. There's a lot of money that has to be put on the table. In the end, of course, they cannot only run their old power plants longer, which will already cost quite a lot, but they must also invest in new generation capacities. And so everybody is confronted with this situation because we see that decarbonization to a large extent means electrification. And electrification via heat pumps, electric vehicles, hydrogen production, and so forth. And that means we need more electricity, much more electricity than we have used in the past. And so this is a challenge practically for all member states. No? And of course, we use different technologies to cope with this challenge. But it's a general challenge for everybody, no? And I mean, you can argue, no, that you're looking for the cheapest way to achieve these high levels of electricity, and the market should guide you a bit, no? What are these possibilities that generate electricity for lowest cost?
So you mentioned that the plan is to have in Germany alone 400 gigawatts of potential of renewables installed within 10 years or so, with the peak demand currently being at 80 gigawatts. That's quite a safety margin. But so does that mean going forward that prices will come down big time? Can we expect prices, electricity prices, at the consumer level to go down or perhaps even lower than the pre-war levels we have seen?
No. Electricity prices will stay high. The reason is that, of course, we have this change in supply, but also demand is going to change. And what is going to happen is that demand will follow supply, which means in times where we have a lot of electricity, there will be a lot of demand for this electricity. And overall, the demand is going to increase potentially even more than the supply side we were talking about. That means there are then, of course, other users of this electricity that are willing to pay a price for electricity. And this price will therefore not be zero in the future. And we see in all these market models that are simulating these potential markets in 2030 and afterwards, prices will stay very high. No, they will stay around 80 euro per megawatt hour, which means that electricity is going to be scarce also in the future. And even though we will have times where a lot of electricity produced, that will be the times where the batteries are going to be running, the electrolyzers, the demand is going to shift and so forth. So there is a value for that, obviously. And this value that will play out in markets. And so that will be an issue because, I said a lot of decarbonization is electrification. And if electricity is expensive, all this is difficult. And therefore, it's really important to think about how we can make electricity cheaper by, for example, removing some of the taxes and other burdens that are on electricity. I think that is one part of the story. But we have to work on the supply side also. And we have to think about how we can get as much supply in the markets as possible and allow for these fluctuations, because this is allowing for new business models. If you have a battery, you need the fluctuation. If you invest in other flexibilities, you need the fluctuation. And that means policymakers must allow this fluctuation to happen. Otherwise, they will not get the market incentives for the technologies that you will need on these markets that will be well shaped by renewables in the future.
So we'll have to wait for nuclear fusion to get really cheap electricity prices, but I guess that we'll have to wait for a podcast on that. Let me try a quick summary then. So what makes electricity price a market special? Well, it's that you have to match demand and supply at each point in time. Storage is difficult, and that makes those markets special. Is there an integrated European electricity market? Obviously, there has been more integration over time, and that reflects different capacities. And it's only efficient, if you will, to then connect countries. At the same time, it was more bottom-up driven, you said, more by the grid operators. On the political side, there was not much going for that. The reform of the electricity market, which was just agreed upon, will that temper price spikes? You said, first of all, it's very good news that there was no change to the short-term wholesale markets. You said it's important to have those price signals there at the beginning, or if you will, they kickstart all these adjustments that are needed. The signal here is important. Now, the contracts for differences, they should incentivize investments in renewables. And you said there's a lot of flexibility in how you do these, a lot of different strike prices. So you sounded quite positive here when it comes to those instruments. What can we do to transmit the price signal also to households so that they not just have to once a year look at the price? And you said dynamic pricing schemes will come. And it's also important that the regional price signal is somewhat transmitted. What's the optimal degree of integration when it comes to, if you will, the electricity market is European, regional, and so on and so forth? And that depends, you said, mostly on the infrastructure. The better the grid, the better or the bigger the market can be, all else equal. How is decarbonization progressing? And you sounded again optimistic that we'll get there over time. And the EU reform of the electricity market in the end tries to do that, put incentives on the table to build up all those renewables needed. Will the targets, the carbon targets, be met? Again, optimistic, at least that was my understanding. But the challenge is obviously to build up all those renewables. 400 gigawatts is what you mentioned. So there's still quite a bit that needs to be done, but also a question of kind of the backup, the base producer coal, something needs to replace it. And you said gas powered plants that are also hydrogen ready are probably the solution here. And finally, long-term price outlook for the price. And there you sounded less optimistic, or let's put it that way. You said they're not going to come down, unfortunately. And the reason is, well, demand will also be high. There will be lots of supply, but demand as well. And that then will keep prices relatively high. Was that a fair summary?
Yeah, that was a fair summary. Probably I would like to add one thing on the long-term electricity markets, because I think it's important. We talked a lot about Contracts for Difference. I mean, this is what I said is you have to be very careful when designing this, as this is now covering public support. And of course, if you design that in a wrong way, it's going to take away liquidity from the markets, and it's going to prevent the market signals to be transported, and that's really a problem. So therefore, I propose these two strike prices, bandwidth, with bands that are relatively broad, in order to intervene little with the markets, to provide some security from downward pressure, but besides, leave the market signals intact. And I just would like to mention that, of course, the other part of these long-term markets are power purchase agreements, so bilateral contracts by companies over electricity delivery over long term over longer periods. I think this is, of course, really important, and this has to be supported and fostered by, for example, taking over some of the risks that are in these long-term contracts, bilateral contracts. But this is, let's say, the market-based type of development on long-term markets, besides the governmental support scheme that we talked about, that is at least equally important. I would claim it's probably more important to move into these direction in the longer term, and so therefore this is a development that we should closely watch and as well support as good as possible.
Thanks. I guess we have to do another podcast on that in the future and also to take note or to compare notes how all these targets have been met or not.
Yes.
Thanks again for your time today. It was very insightful, and unfortunately, or fortunately for you, a topic that is not anymore a sideshow, but very important going forward, also for the economic future of Europe. Thanks again for your time.